Chapter 18. Various formulae for the rate of surplus value. We have seen that the rate of surplus value is represented by the following formulae. 1. Surplus value over variable capital, S over V, equals surplus value over value of labor power, equals surplus labor over necessary labor. The two first of these formulae represent, as a ratio of values, that which in the third is represented as a ratio of the times during which those values are produced. These formulae, supplementary the one to the other, are rigorously definite and correct. We therefore find them substantially, but not consciously, worked out in classical political economy. There we meet with the following derivative formulae. 2. Surplus labor over working day equals surplus value over value of the product equals surplus product over total product. One and the same ratio is here expressed as a ratio of labor times, of the values in which those labor times are embodied, and of the products in which those values exist. It is, of course, understood that by value of the product is meant only the value newly created in a working day, the constant part of the value of the product being excluded. In all of these formulae, too, the actual degree of exploitation of labor, or the rate of surplus value, is falsely expressed. Let the working day be 12 hours. Then, making the same assumptions as in former instances, the real degree of exploitation of labor will be represented in the following proportions. 6 hours surplus labor over 6 hours necessary labor equals surplus value of 3 shillings over variable capital of 3 shillings equals 100%. From formulae 2, we get very differently. 6 hours surplus labor over working day of 12 hours equals surplus value of 3 shillings over value created of 6 shillings equals 50%. These derivative formulae express in reality only the proportion in which the working day, or the value produced by it, is divided between capitalist and labourer. If they are to be treated as direct expressions of the degree of self-expansion of capital, the following erroneous law would hold good. Surplus labor or surplus value can never reach 100%. Footnote. Thus, for example, in Dritter Brief an von Kirchmann von Robertus, Berlin 1851. I shall return to this letter later on. In spite of its erroneous theory of rent, it sees through the nature of capitalist production. Note added in the third German edition. It may be seen from this how favourably Marx judged his predecessors whenever he found in them real progress or new and sound ideas. The subsequent publication of Rodbertus's letters to Dr. Rudolf Meyer has shown that this acknowledgement by Marx wants restricting to some extent. In those letters, this passage occurs. Capital must be rescued not only from labour but from itself, and that will be best effected by treating the acts of the industrial capitalist as economic and political functions that have been delegated to him with his capital, and by treating his profit as a form of salary, because we still know no other social organisation. But salaries may be regulated, and may also be reduced if they take too much from wages. The irruption of Marx into society, as I may call his book, must be warded off. Altogether, Marx's book is not so much an investigation into capital as a polemic against the present form of capital, a form which he confounds with the concept itself of capital. To such ideological commonplaces did the bold attack by Rodbertus in his Social Letters finally dwindle down. Friedrich Engels, end of footnote. Since the surplus labour is only an aliquot part of the working day, or since surplus value is only an aliquot part of the value created, the surplus labour must necessarily be always less than the working day, or the surplus value always less than the total value created. In order, however, to attain the ratio of 100 to 100, they must be equal. In order that the surplus labour may absorb the whole day, that is, an average day of any week or year, the necessary labour must sink to zero. But if the necessary labour vanish, so too does the surplus labour, since it is only a function of the former. The ratio surplus labour over working day, or surplus value over value created, can therefore never reach the limit 100 over 100, still less rise to 100 plus x over 100, but not so the rate of surplus value, the real degree of exploitation of labour. Take, for example, the estimate of L. de la Verne, according to which the English agricultural labourer gets only 1/4, the capitalist farmer, on the other hand, 3/4, of the product or its value, apart from the question of how the booty is subsequently divided between the capitalist, the landlord, and others. According to this, this surplus labour of the English agricultural labourer is to his necessary labour as 3 to 1, which gives a rate of exploitation of 300%. Footnote. That part of the product which merely replaces the constant capital advanced is, of course, left out in this calculation. Mr. L. de la Verne, a blind admirer of England, is inclined to estimate the share of the capitalist too low rather than too high. End of footnote. The favourite method of treating the working day as constant in magnitude became, through the use of formulae too, a fixed usage, because in them surplus labour is always compared with a working day of given length. The same holds good when the repartition of the value produced is exclusively kept in sight. The working day that has already been realised in given value must necessarily be a day of given length. The habit of representing surplus value and value of labour power as fractions of the value created, a habit that originates in the capitalist mode of production itself and whose import will hereafter be disclosed, conceals the very transaction that characterises capital, namely the exchange of variable capital for living labour power, and the consequent exclusion of the labourer from the product. Instead of the real fact, we have a false semblance of an association, in which labourer and capitalist divide the product in proportion to the different elements which they respectively contribute towards its formation. Footnote. All well-developed forms of capitalist production being forms of cooperation, nothing is, of course, easier than to make abstraction from their antagonistic character, and to transform them, by a word, into some form of free association, as is done by A. de la Borde in De l'esprit d'association dans tous les intérêts de la communauté, Paris, 1818. H. Carey, the Yankee, occasionally performs this conjuring trick with like success, even with the relations resulting from slavery. End of footnote. Moreover, the formulae 2 can at any time be reconverted into formulae 1. If, for instance, we have surplus labour of 6 hours over working day of 12 hours, then the necessary labour time being 12 hours less the surplus labour of 6 hours, we get the following result. Surplus labour of 6 hours over necessary labour of 6 hours equals 100 over 100. There is a third formula which I have occasionally already anticipated. It is 3. Surplus value over value of labour power equals surplus labour over necessary labour equals unpaid labour over paid labour. After the investigations we have given above, it is no longer possible to be misled by the formula unpaid labour over paid labour into concluding that the capitalist pays for labour and not for labour power. This formula is only a popular expression for surplus labour over necessary labour. The capitalist pays the value, so far as price coincides with value, of the labour power, and receives in exchange the disposal of the living labour power itself. His usufruct is spread over two periods. During one, the labourer produces a value that is only equal to the value of his labour power. He produces its equivalent. This the capitalist receives in return for his advance of the price of the labour power, a product ready-made in the market. During the other period, the period of surplus labour, the usufruct of the labour power creates a value for the capitalist that costs him no equivalent. Footnote. Although the physiocrats could not penetrate the mystery of surplus value, yet this much was clear to them, viz., that it is a wealth which is independent and disposable, which he has not bought, and which he sells. Turgot, Réflexion sur la formation et la distribution des richesses. This expenditure of labour power comes to him gratis. In this sense, it is that surplus labour can be called unpaid labour. Capital, therefore, is not only, as Adam Smith says, the command over labour, it is essentially the command over unpaid labour. All surplus value, whatever particular form, profit, interest, or rent, it may subsequently crystallise into, is in substance the materialisation of unpaid labour. The secret of the self-expansion of capital resolves itself into having the disposal of a definite quantity of other people's unpaid labour.